Criminal Justice Subcommittee will come to order. Lindsay, please call the roll.
Chair Trunell.
Here.
Vice Chair Barnaby.
Here.
Ranking Member Raynor Goolsbee. Representatives Abbott.
Here.
Baker.
Here.
Brackett.
Here.
Bracy Davis.
Here.
Brannon.
Here.
Pacello.
Here.
Garcia.
Here.
Gottlieb.
Here.
Jock.
Here.
Michael.
Here.
Plakin.
Here.
Silvers. Silvers. Stark. Stark. Tuck.
Here.
Yarkowski.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. I want to remind everyone to please silence their cell phones. Also reminder for our members and our presenters, please ensure that you turn off your microphone, turn on your microphone when speaking, and turn off your microphone when finished. I also request that you please fill out a public appearance card if you intend to speak before the committee. I want to thank everyone for being here today. Welcome. Today we'll be considering two bills, HB 43, compensation for wrongfully incarcerated persons, and HB 71, violent offenses committed against criminal defense attorneys. We will also hear presentations on prison work release programs from the Department of Corrections, who will tell us about the state-run work release programs, and we will also hear from Ms. Cecilia Denmark, who will join us on behalf of Bridges International of Orange County to tell us about the work program that is going on. We look forward to hearing from both of them later today. The first bill for consideration today is HB 43, compensation for wrongfully incarcerated persons, by Representative Koster. Representative Koster, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be as brief as I can. It sounds like you've got a great agenda ahead of you. Thank you, Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, committee members. To date, 84 people have been exonerated here in Florida, while only 10 have received compensation. Some because they didn't serve any time in prison, others because they haven't applied. Of the 84 exonerees in Florida, 17 people who have collectively lost 270 years of their lives due to a wrongful conviction can't receive compensation here in Florida because of two barriers present in our law. House Bill 43 changes our compensation law in three ways. HB 43 extends the timeline to file for compensation from 90 days to 2 years to allow a reasonable time for these exonerees to seek compensation. It eliminates Florida's clean hands provision, a provision that is unique to only Florida, and outlines avenues for exonerees to seek compensation, which is the subject of one of the amendments, Mr. Chair. Additionally, the bill does maintain exceptions for those who are currently in prison for a crime or serving a concurrent sentence for a crime they were rightfully convicted of, or if they've already received compensation. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Committee, are there any questions? Questions for the sponsor? Seeing no questions. Are there any amendments?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we've got two amendments.
First Amendment, barcode number 629507. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment removes an obsolete definition and makes a technical change to correct a grammatical error. That is the amendment.
Thank you. Are there any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, any public testimony? Seeing no public testimony, is there any debate on the amendment? Seeing no debate on the amendment, all those in... You're recognized to close on your amendment.
I'll waive close, Chair.
Thank you. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Amendment is adopted. Second Amendment, barcode 967821, Representative Coskrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment removes the offset provision of the bill and restores the original statutory language and makes other technical and stylistic changes and fixes a drafting error.
Thank you. Are there any questions on the amendment? Any public testimony? Representative Coskrey, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
I'll waive close, Chair.
All those in favor of adopting the amendment signify by saying aye. All opposed? By your vote, the amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill as amended. Is there any public testimony on the bill? First, we have Chelsea Murphy, waiving in support. Next, we have Chris Strandberg, waiving in support. Americans for Prosperity, thank you. Catalina
Klibben,
Disability Rights Florida, waiving in support. Dr. Adina Thompson, Innocence Projection of Florida, proponent. She was here? Oh, okay. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, committee members. My name is Adina Thompson. I represent Innocence Project of Florida. The state of Florida believes in liberty. Representative Koster, Chair, Vice Chair, honored committee members, I am confident that each of you also believes in liberty. Wrongful conviction is fundamentally an issue of stolen liberty. Although no amount of money can make up for years behind bars, access to statutory compensation is one way the state of Florida can ease an exonerated person's transition back into society, a society some left 3 or 4, or tragically even 5 decades ago. In 2008, Florida led the country by being one of the earliest states to enact legislation to compensate someone for taking their liberty by wrongfully convicting them. Today, 38 states have compensation laws. They have learned from our example here in Florida, and now we can learn from theirs by examining how our present law is out of step. And Representative Koster outlined the ways that we can repair that bill, that current law. House Bill 43 does that. It brings the Florida exoneree compensation statute in line with the rest of the country's law by removing the clean hands bar that Representative Koster referenced and by extending the filing window while also adding important safeguards. HB 43 will allow 17 Florida exonerees, many of whom I personally have been lucky to be introduced to, will allow those individuals to apply for compensation. As Representative Koster identified, that group of people has lost a collected 270 years of life, of freedom for crimes they did not commit. Each of these 17 people is currently barred from filing. The state of Florida changed their lives once by freeing them. The state of Florida can change their lives again by giving them access to apply for compensation. On behalf of the Innocence Project, Innocence Project of Florida, and every innocent Floridian affected by wrongful conviction, I thank each of you for your support of freedom, of liberty, and your support of this very important bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Maria Libriato, wishes to speak. Floridians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. Next, we have Herman Lindsay, Death Row Exonerators, or FADP. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Vice Chair, and the members of the committee. My name is Herman Lindsay. I am Florida's 23rd death row exoneree. I've been coming here to the Capitol for the last 7 years, speaking about this bill and trying to help the transition to get it right. And I think that I like to be thankful that, and I was very excited when I met her yesterday to say we finally got it right. You know, I don't think anyone in this committee owe me anything. I don't think anyone owe me anything. You're not responsible for what happened to me. But to put this bill in the proper perspective helps soothe what happened to me. You know, one of the biggest things happen when I speak around the world is that they ask, did you get compensated? And I say no, and I have to explain why. I'm a Floridian, and I love my state. And for us to have laws that actually makes it harder for us to be compensated for what happened to us is just shameful. But I think that today, if we pass this bill and I still haven't got compensated, and I'm not even worried about my compensation, but I'm worried about those that come behind me that has to go through what I went through when I first came home from death row. And I hope that y'all find it in y'all hearts and mind to actually think about if it was you. You have no idea of what I've been through and how the outcome has come. But the thing about it is that you have the power to change it. And I'm asking you to approve this bill because this is finally, out of all the years that we've been here, this is finally.
Any debate? Representative Gottlieb.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to thank you and your staff for placing the bill on the agenda and for working hard, and Rep. Koster and the Innocence Project. I know this has been a three-year journey for you. The clean hands provision is tremendous. I think this is probably, since my time in the legislature, one of the most significant pieces of criminal justice reform that I've seen, and I applaud you for your effort.
Thank you. Representative Barnaby, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to commend Representative Koster for this extremely good bill. This is something that I believe is going to set the standard for our state and for the rest of the country. And justice must be done. Justice is not blind today. Justice is on duty. And I'm proud to be a part of bringing compensation to those that were wrongly convicted. Thank you, Representative Koster.
Thank you. Representative Bracey Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to echo my colleagues and say thank you for this bill. Thank you to the Innocence Project for your advocacy. I think Mr. Herman said it best today. While we could artfully debate and give some good reasons, I think Mr. Herman's testimony just spoke volumes about this stolen liberty. And while it is not our fault to the people that sit on this dais, is not our fault. I think it is our responsibility to fix it. So thank you for this bill, and thank you for coming and sharing your testimony with us. And I am voting up on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Representative Yokoski, you're correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rep. Koster, I just want to commend you on this bill. It's an honor to sit here and vote for this bill today. And I want to thank Mr. Herman for coming in. God bless you for what you've been through. And this is what it's all about. This is what we're elected to do right here. And so thank you. And Mr. Chairman, thanks for putting this bill up today.
Thank you. Representative Garcia, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Costner, thank you so much for bringing this bill. This is a great bill. And Mr. Chairman, thank you for putting it up. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Rep. Michaels, you're recognized.
Thank you, Representative. I want to echo as well my colleagues. I think we're all behind you. And we support you and thank you for doing something that needed to be done. And for me, I think about those that we lost. And I want to thank Mr. Herman for coming. And it is an honor to sit here right now on this day, during this time, and to have the possibility of trying to make things right. Thank you.
Rep. Casella, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Coster, once again, I will echo the comments of my colleagues, and thank you for bringing this. You know, we hear many bills in front of our committees and everything, but when somebody comes in, like Mr. Herman, and gives a personal testimony, okay, and what touched me about your testimony, Mr. Herman, was that it's not about his compensation, it's about the ones behind him. And I think that speaks volumes, what this bill is going to do, this good bill is going to do. So definitely going to be up on it. Thank you, Mr. Herman, for coming in.
Thank you all for your debate. Representative Coster, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Chair. It's hard to follow all of your comments, but particularly Mr. Herman's comments. And I'll tell you, in the 3 years that I've been working on this, I've had the privilege to meet some of these folks. They are not angry. They are not resentful. They are not revengeful. They are happy to be free. That's it. They don't get angry at traffic lights. They don't get angry when people cut them off. They are just happy to be free. That's it. And if we as a state don't get something right, then we as a state need to make it right. And by your yes vote today, you have the opportunity to make it right. And with that, I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Coster. Having closed on her bill, Lindsay, please call the roll.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracy Davis?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casella?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jock?
No.
Michael?
Absolutely, yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rainer Goolsbee? Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Yurkowski? Chair Trunell?
Yes.
16 yeas, one nay, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, HB 43 is reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Chair.
The last bill for consideration today is HB 71, Violent Offenses Committed Against Criminal Defense Attorneys, by Representative Maney. Representative Maney, you are recognized to present your bill.
There we go. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman, Ranking Member. Most of us, I think all of us, think when we go to a courthouse, go to a courtroom to do the people's business, that we expect to be in a safe place as the people's business is conducted. In November of last year, a criminal trial was had in Gainesville. The facts are pretty simple and straightforward. We can't play it here in either the chamber or the committee rule in the committee room based on House rules. But the court security camera caught a very shocking incident. In November of last year, during a criminal trial, the defense counsel got up to address the court or the prosecutor, I don't really know. The video doesn't have sound. But as he turned to address the prosecutor or the judge, the defendant got up very calmly, walked over to the defense attorney, and cold cocked him. The defense attorney fell to the floor, suffered a concussion, case was mistrialed and will have to be tried again. This morning, I expect you'll have the opportunity to hear from that defense lawyer. What this bill does, it's very simple. I sent each of you a text about it. What this bill does, in effect, it adds two lines. And really, most importantly, just two or three words that says the current law, which protects justices, judges, prosecutors, or their assistants, it now will include defense attorneys, public defenders, their assistants, regional conflict counsel, their assistants, lawyers appointed off the registry. It protects the defense attorneys just like it protects everybody else in the courtroom. It provides for a safe space for the people's business to be conducted. And if somebody violates that law, it provides for an enhanced penalty. So you don't get kind of a get-out-of-jail-free card by beating up your own lawyer. Mr. Chairman, that's the bill.
Thank you, sir. Are there any questions for the sponsor? Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Rep. Manny, I appreciate the bill. I'm torn on the bill. As you know, I'm a criminal defense practitioner. I have been for 30 years. I recall a case in Broward County where at magistrate court, a public defender was punched and the individual had significant mental health problems. And I'm mindful of the case that you just talked to us about. My concern and question is, how pervasive is this of a problem? Do you have statistics that talk about how often this is happening to defense counsel?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, I don't have statistics. I don't even know if those statistics are gathered. I do know when I talk to my state attorney in my circuit, she opined that she had been battered in the courtroom. So we've got at least three incidences, but I honestly think one incident is enough to address the change. The public deserves, in my view, and I think in your view, as a defense attorney, we deserve a safe place for the people's disputes to be resolved.
Follow up, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. I understand you spoke to the state attorney. Have you spoken to the Public Defenders Association or FACDL to see their positions?
I think they're going to stand mute. Okay.
Nothing further, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing no other questions, are there any amendments?
Mr. Chairman, there is one amendment.
You are recognized to barcode number 103229. You're recognized.
The amendment, I'm not real, well, the amendment, Mr. Chairman, if passed, would include and specifically specify that assistant public defenders, assistant regional counsel are included. Another statute talks about assistance, but it's not really clear in this statute, and rather than have a possible confusion, we wanted to specify that assistants are also covered.
Thank you. Any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, any public testimony on the amendment? Anyone wishing to debate on the amendment? With that, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Waive close, Mr. Chairman.
With him waiving close on the amendment, all in favor of adopting the amendment signify by saying yay.
Yay.
Any opposition? With your vote, the amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill as amended. Is there any public testimony on the bill?
I believe so, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. First up, we have Candace Brower, offices of Criminal Conflict and Civil Regional Council. Wave in support. Chelsea Murphy, Right on Crime. Wave in support. Eric Atera, Office of Criminal Conflict and Civil Regional Council. You are recognized.
Thank you, sir. Thank you all. My name is Eric Atria. I've been in public defense for 18 years. Representative Gottlieb, if you are a criminal defense attorney in Broward, you may know my father, Drew. Between the two of us, we've been doing public defense for 46 combined years. On November 15th of last year, I was in the middle of a trial defending a man who was accused of attempting to rob and threatening to bomb a bank. As a witness was taking the stand, I suddenly found myself on the floor, face up, regaining consciousness, in a lot of pain and confusion. It turned out my client had made a calculated decision to knock me out in order to mistry his case so he could avoid what was going to be a long sentence, which was inevitable. I say calculated because I've since heard jail calls where he's giddily recounting his attack on me to his sister, laughing about it, saying he had to do it, but it was no big deal because it's just a misdemeanor. Well, fortunately for me, he cracked my skull. Right here, I still have a scar. He broke this tooth, and he gave me a concussion. I say fortunately because had he not done those things, it wouldn't have been a big deal. But because he did, the state attorney's office was able to file second-degree felony charges against him, making it more of a big deal. But again, had he not, he would have been facing just an additional year in the county jail, which is outrageous to me. I believe in my work. I believe in the principles of it. And I know that some people feel that enhancing penalties is not in vogue. But for somebody to think that they can just attack us to end a trial out of their for convenience is outrageous, especially considering the law already protects every other person in that courtroom. So I think by passing this bill, it would send multiple messages, first to defendants who would consider attacking their own attorneys, that it would be a big deal. And second of all, it would tell us defense attorneys who do this job out of a passion and belief that we are protected, respected, and appreciated just like every other person in that courtroom already under Florida law. I respect and appreciate Representative Maney so much for bringing this forward, and my boss, Candace Brower, and I thank you all for your time.
Thank you for being here.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Are there any members that are wishing to debate? Anyone like Representative Gottlieb? You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Eric, I want to address you, if that's okay, Mr. Chair. It's not negative.
Yes.
Okay. So in 1992, when I started at the Public Defender's Office, that's fine, my mentor was Drew Atria. I learned a tremendous amount from your father and have a great deal of love and respect for him. I tried my first case in the courtroom with him sitting in the back. And as a criminal defense attorney, I feel for you. My heart breaks for you for what happened to you. I just don't know really where I land on the bill, and I can't support it today. Maybe as the bill goes through the process, I can. But what happened to you shouldn't happen. And I'm a big believer in the integrity in the system and what Rep. Maney was talking about. I just don't know that this is the right fix. And I understand that that defendant in particular doesn't sound like he had significant mental health problems and didn't commit his crime against you out of anything other than vicious ill will. And he should be punished for that. But as it sits today, I apologize for that, but I just can't support the bill.
I understand.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Brannon, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm always in favor of any legislation that brings all officers of the court in line together. I filed legislation before for both our public defenders and our Office of Regional Counsel to do that. And of course, this does that also. I think it brings everybody more in line. I don't want to bore you with a war story, but I'll tell you about something I witnessed in the courtroom and how bad, quick things can go bad. I had not been out of the University of Florida very long, had gotten a job in the United States Marshal Service, was in federal court, was standing at a behind a defendant, much as in the position that you're standing. This is sort of set up like a courtroom. The federal judge for our public defender was sentencing, once again, a bank robber. And he handed down a pretty substantial sentence. I think it was 25 years. The defendant was in leg irons. He had a waist chain on, and he had handcuffs on. If any of you have ever seen that, those handcuffs run through the waist chain, so he does not have much room. I'll stand up and show you, but he does not have much room to move. We had been through a trial with him. We had watched him very closely. He was a type of individual we thought was capable of violence. But that day, as two deputy United States marshals, and me being one of them, stood behind him, his federal public defender was a sort of a shorter guy, and the inmate was a tall fella. He jumped straight up in the air. I can still see it in my mind today, even though it's been 30-something years ago. Jumped straight up in the air and hit his federal public defender on top of the head with two law enforcement officers standing 2 feet behind him. So I think even in those situations, when we think we're prepared, we're not. This will just add another layer of protection. Maybe these folks will think twice. Now, I don't know what gets in their mind in these type of situations, but anything we can do to protect all of our court officials is certainly a good move, and I highly support this measure.
Thank you for that. Any other debate? Seeing no more debate, Representative Maney, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just say this is an opportunity to treat all participants in the court process the same and will increase security in our courtrooms. With that, Mr. Chairman, I close and ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative. Having closed on his bill, Lindsay, please call the roll.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracey Davis?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
No.
Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rainer Goolsbee? Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Yarkoski? Chair Trunow?
Yes.
16 yeas, one nay, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. Show HB 71 reported favorably. Congratulations. Members, now we will move into the presentation portion of the meeting today. I thought it would be interesting and informative for the committee to learn about the kinds of programs currently being offered within our prison system that work to prepare incarcerated men and women for successful reentry back into the workforce and society in general. To that end, today we will hear from the Department of Corrections and the Briggs International of Orange County. First, we are joined by Richard Comerford, Deputy Secretary of the Florida Department of Corrections. Deputy Secretary Comerford is responsible for the operational oversight of the Florida Department of Corrections. Mr. Comerford holds a bachelor's degree in criminology from the University of Florida. He is a member of the American Correctional Association and the Florida Sheriff's Association, and a graduate of FDLE's Executive Leadership Training. His tenure and experience include comprehensive correctional management, institutional operations, investigations, and emergency preparedness and response, with 18 years at the management and executive level. As Deputy Secretary of the third largest state correctional system in America, he is dedicated to fostering and organization built on integrity and professionalism and the growth and development of staff. Deputy Secretary Comerford, welcome back to the Criminal Justice Subcommittee, and thank you for being here with us again today. You are recognized.
Thank you, sir. It is an honor to be back. Good morning, Chair Trunow, Vice Chair Barnaby, Ranking Member Rainer Goolsbee, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today about the community department's community release programs. The Department of Corrections Community Release Programs, more commonly known as work release, allows inmates to live and work from a community release center in the community outside the secure perimeters of a correctional institution. The purpose of housing inmates in this setting is so that they can achieve meaningful employment and restore community and family connections and participate in specialized programs. These factors, we believe, contribute greatly to an individual's success in transitioning back to society. considered one of the department's premier and most impactful reentry efforts. Community release programs are authorized by statute 945.091. Inmates convicted of sexual battery and escape are statutorily ineligible to participate in community release programs. Florida statute authorizes the department to set rules for the safe and efficient operation of community release centers. Our job is to balance rehabilitative and restoration goals with our public safety obligation to mitigate the inherent risk of extending the limits of confinement beyond a secure perimeter of an institution into our communities. On this slide, you can see the current rules governing inmate participation in the program. These encompass both the statutory limitations and specific criteria that has shown to be primary indicators of unacceptable risk to our communities. It should be noted inmates assigned to community release programs are designated community custody, which is our most least restrictive custody classification and indicative of an individual's positive adjustment in compliance with procedure and rule. Inmates who participate in a community release program are assigned to a work release center under one of two assignment types: work center work assignment or community work release. The criteria for assignment to either program is based on the remaining time of the individual in incarceration. A center work assignment inmate has the most time remaining on their sentence and is not eligible for paid employment. These individuals routinely are assigned to a support job at the center, doing maintenance, grounds, food service, jobs of that nature, but they're also accessible to transitional services and programs in preparation for their transition to center work release or community work release. This assignment allows an inmate to obtain a paid employment job in the community while continuing to access those services and programming to help facilitate a successful reentry, as well as volunteer programs and things of that nature to allow them to successfully transition. It should be noted that an inmate does not have to enter the program as a center work assignment. They can come straight into the center work release assignment based off the amount of time they have remaining. Center work assignments account for a very small portion of our beds, roughly 3%. So the majority of our focus is on providing the inmate an opportunity to have gainful employment as a community release assignment. As noted in this slide here, FDC has a community release presence across the state, reaching from Pensacola to Miami. We have a total of 30 centers across the state, 25 dedicated for males, 5 dedicated for females, with an overall capacity of approximately 3,500 beds. Of all of our centers, 21 are contracted and operated by our private partners. This slide here represents a recent snapshot in time of our community release program population. In the past few years, the department has experienced an overall reduction in the inmate population due to a changing court dynamic in those that are being sentenced to the department. As such, the current bed fill rate at our community release centers are lower than historical averages. State-operated centers are shown in black, and contracted centers are reflected here in blue. The department makes every effort to prioritize the placement of eligible inmates into our contracted centers. It's worth noting here that the goal always is to try to place an inmate in a program near their home for a family support system and to help facilitate that successful transition back into society. It's somewhat counterproductive to place an inmate in a work center program in a different part of the state than they'll eventually be released to. For example, to send somebody from the Panhandle to Central or South Florida just to get them a job, and then when they're released, they're moving back to the Panhandle, they're still going to be unemployed and, you know, trying to find work. So that impacts how we assign inmates and place inmates in our centers throughout the state. As we mentioned previously, eligibility for community release programs is driven by custody. This graphic here illustrates a comparison of 2016 to 2022 and our custody makeup. As the inmate population has decreased in these recent years, the percentage of inmates who are custody eligible for consideration to be placed in our programs has decreased at nearly double the rate. This has contributed greatly to our inability to populate our work release centers. With the exception of some crimes, such as sex offenses, or unless otherwise prohibited by rule or statute, the type of offense does not have significant play in eligibility. As you can see here in this table for 2022, we had approximately 18% of our work release inmates who were assigned to work release were convicted of a violent offense. The department's classification assessment of an inmate's risk to others is, and to the community, determines eligibility. As we mentioned earlier, they must be community custody to go into a work release center. The primary mechanism we have for assessing an inmate's risk is our custody system, which considers multiple factors in determining that custody, from the current sentence, past sentences, criminal history, time remaining, discipline history, institutional adjustment, program completions, and a variety of other factors, combined with good, sound correctional judgment when determining an inmate's appropriate custody level. FDC's custody system has been subjected to both internal and external audits and has been validated as being predictive of an individual's probability for misconduct. The fundamental obligation of the department is public safety. While inmates are still in our care and custody and control, we are bound by that obligation. As stated in 945.091, that statute authorizes the department to extend the limits of confinement to inmates whom we feel or there is reasonable cause to believe the inmate will honor that his or her trust in the community. And again, as an extension of the limits of confinement, these individuals were being placed in the community in a work release setting. However, we still have the duty and the responsibilities for care, custody, and control of these individuals while they're in our communities. While we do our best to select inmates that are most likely to succeed in community release programs, there are some that are just not successful and are moved back into our secure perimeters of correctional institutions for a variety of reasons. As you can see here in this graphic, approximately 160 a month. That's for a variety of reasons, from escape to failure to comply with procedures and rules, deviating from agreed upon travel plans, or unauthorized absences from their job or work areas. It's a significant percentage, despite our stringent criteria for placement. Our community release programs are important and serves a very useful purpose in rehabilitation and reentry, but it's not without risk. Modifying current criteria in an effort to increase the eligible participants increases that risk to us as a state and an agency. Again, Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to present a short overview of our community release programs. I don't want to miss an opportunity to thank each of you for your continued support of the agency and the work you do on behalf of our state, and to recognize our brave men and women in our agency and in our department throughout the state who serve in the state of Florida. I'll be glad to answer any questions the committee may have, sir.
Thank you, Deputy Secretary Comerford. Questions? Anyone have questions for the Deputy Secretary?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bracy Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that presentation. One of these centers is in my district in Orlando. Could you do a deeper dive on the process of an individual getting to be a part of this program? Is there a form? What is step-by-step on how you go from not being in the program to being in the program? Thank you.
Sure. You're recognized.
Thanks, sir. Yes, ma'am. Good question. So again, custody drives eligibility and placement in the work release centers. Our classification staff, who are basically our case managers in our institutions, who each inmate in a facility has a classification officer who's managing their case, and they have routine what we call progress reports, progress interviews. As we're watching their custody and their participation and their eligibility, that classification officer has an interview with that individual and looks at their release plan, where they're planning to end their sentence to, and if they're even interested in work release. Work release is a privilege, and the inmate has the right to decline that assignment if he or she so chooses. And if all those factors align, they're eligible, there's space available in the location they would like to go. We also give them an opportunity for some alternatives, but again, we try to avoid placing them in two totally different geographical areas. And if that individual is qualified and meets the criteria, then we schedule them and transfer them to that work release center.
Thank you. Follow up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So based on the information presented today, is the program at capacity?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, ma'am, it's not. And again, that's impacted by our availability of community custody inmates to fill those beds.
Thank you. Representative Barnaby, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Secretary, it seems to be that your statistics are showing that there is a large increase in the inmates that have a problem with the use of drugs. Do you attribute that to anything that we are doing as far as policy, public policy?
You recognize.
Sir, I think to answer your question, programming within our facilities helps address the issue of the drug issue. And kind of as we spoke last time too, our programming, we have a very small percentage, roughly 17% of our inmate population has access to any kind of programs. It's even a lower percentage as it relates to substance use programming. So I'll know that it necessarily connects back to the work release. We do have through our private partners and even in our work release centers, we do try to provide substance use programming. Those individuals in work release have the ability to engage and participate in community-related substance use programs such as NA or AA.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you. Representative Baker?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question on the statistics as well. So if I'm reading this right, the inmates in the community release program are about 6,800, and then in 2022, the removals, about 1,900 total, were removed from the program. So that's about 28% of the participants. Do you have statistics on, of that 28%, where do they fall within of the offense that they were in? Is it related to certain offenses, or can you provide more information about why they were removed or and what they did?
You're recognized.
Mr. Chair, we can. I don't have them available with me, but we do track, and the statistics that you see here are from our research and data section. Again, those that are removed for a variety of reasons is from escape, which there's, you know, approximately 30 to 35 escape or walk-offs, if you will. And then again, they're not complying with their routes of travel. In 1920, the legislature allocated us the funding to complete the electronic monitoring efforts that we have. So all of our individuals on work release, both state and contracted, are on electronic monitoring. So they set parameters of travel, areas of exclusion that they can't be in, and we monitor that. So sometimes when they're found non-compliant, they're violated, as we call it, and sent back to facilities. We also do random urinalysis tests. Sometimes they come up positive for that. That creates a violation for them to go back to facilities as well.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But I'm wondering, is there a pattern of that 28%? Do they fall in the drugs category?
You're right.
Potentially, or any other category?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We can get that for you. We have the ability to drill down to that and kind of give you those statistics. We'll follow up.
Thank you.
Well, I have a question on recidivism rates, I mean, the goal is to have folks leave the system and integrate back into society. When we look at folks that are incarcerated and then just released versus going through the work program, what do you think the advantages of the work release program is? What's the difference in the recidivism rate you recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The recidivism rate for our work release centers is considerably lower than the overall recidivism rate. I think a lot of it has to do with the type of inmate that makes it to work release. Because of the custody classification of community and everything that goes along with that, their sentence, their criminal history, their participation in programs and substance use and things of that nature, and then just having a meaningful job when they're in the community. They have stability, they're working they have to get up every morning or every afternoon, every evening to go to work. They're establishing those processes and habits that helps them successfully transition. They're making money, they're providing funds back to their family, they're paying their restitution cost. I think it just sets them up for better transition to society.
Yeah, thank you. With, it's a couple questions. I'll probably get a little more clear idea when we talk with the next presenter as well, but just having the cost of the institution, the main institution, versus a work release program, does the state save monies going through the work release program? Does it cost less? You recognize?
I'd like to get our financial department to provide some numbers as it relates to the per diem. In generalities, yes, sir. There's less overhead, less staff involved in supervision. The physical plants are smaller as well. So generally, yes, sir, it is easier and more cost efficient to supervise those in community work release.
Thank you. Anyone else have any questions for the presenter? Well, thank you. Thank you for being here and giving this information that helps us understand how DOC is operating. We do have one. We have a walk-in appearance card from Loretta Phillipson. She would like to speak.
Good morning, and thank you, Chair.
You're recognized.
I didn't come prepared to speak today, but I was a product of a work release center while at the Department of Corrections. And I have to say, there need to be more of them, and more people need to go to these work release centers. As far as the financial aspect of it, Representative Trunow, the work release center collect at the time, I don't know what it is now, but when I was at the center, the individual who is working had to pay back 55% of their paycheck to the Department of Corrections / Work Release Center, as well as 10% had to go if they owed cops, which is court-ordered payments, 10% had to go towards if they had child support or owed child support, and then the center I was at, 10% went towards a savings account for when you left work release. Unfortunately, many of the ladies that went to work release were there for a short period of time, like 6 months or less. So the amount of money that they could physically save towards being released was difficult. But it does give them the opportunity to seek employment, work, so that when they are released, majority of them keep the jobs that they had while they were employed because they were released to centers where they wanted to reside when they left. But I think more, there need to be more centers and more people need to be released. This is part of recidivism. There were reasons that people were sent back. We talked, Mr. Comerford talked about those that deviated. So when you go to work release, or when I was there, you had two units. One was an ankle bracelet, and one was another unit that you wore on your waist. We called it the baby. And that tracked all your movement. And unfortunately, you know, when the girls left the center to go to work, you have to fill out a form. And every time you changed a bus, it had to be on this form going to and from your job. And unfortunately, some of them would be at the bus station and think it was okay to walk right next door to the convenience store to go in to get a coffee, a pack of cigarettes, or whatever. That's deviating because they did not follow the regime that they were approved to follow. So unfortunately, they would get returned. I can think of only one time that I was there. There was one drug offense. There may have been others that I wasn't aware of, but there was one. One young lady got sent back because her bunkie gave her two Tylenol, and you can't do that. So there are, but more people I found stayed, could do the program, and be released back into society and have a job when they left. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Well, next, we are joined by Ms. Cecilia Denmark, Vice President and Chief Development Officer of Briggs International of Orange County. Ms. Cecilia Denmark is an experienced correctional manager with more than 40 years working in the field of criminal justice, with 18 of those years serving in the areas of substance abuse, transition, and community reentry initiatives. She is a Chief Executive Officer of CID Consulting, which provides criminal justice training, leadership training, and grant writing. She is currently the Vice President and Chief Development Officer at Briggs International and Briggs of America. Ms. Denmark retired from the Florida Department of Corrections after serving as a correctional officer and being promoted through the ranks to major, a classification officer, and an assistant warden. Ms. Denmark earned a master's degree in administration of justice and security from the University of Phoenix and a bachelor's degree from Barry University. Ms. Denmark serves as a mentor for the Big Brothers and Big Sisters program in her community. Ms. Denmark, you are recognized to address the committee. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman, Vice Chairman, Ranking Member, and committee members. What an honor to be here to talk about work release programs. 40 years I've been doing this and have seen a lot of changes due to issues with our men and women who participate in the programs. We have partnered with the Department of Corrections for more than 40 years, providing substance use treatment, community residential programs, therapeutic communities, and now work release. A question happened earlier about the programming types. Well, all of our programming types come with a price tag. And as budgets decrease, I just had to say this, programs decrease. At Bridges, our goal is to ensure that those that are involved in the criminal justice system, that them and their family members are receiving what they need for them to be successful when they return to their communities, because they are going to return to their communities. Currently, we operate 9 community work release centers throughout the state of Florida, and you can see I have them listed here. We go as far as Columbia and as far as Columbia North and as far as Broward South. Eight of those facilities are male facilities, and one is a female facility. All of the inmates participating in these programs are the community custody levels that Assistant Secretary Comerford spoke about. When an inmate comes into a work release facility, there is a 14-day orientation process that happens with the multidisciplinary staffing team, which consists of a program facilitator, a counselor, and an employment specialist. A risk and needs assessment is done in addition to what is done at the Department of Corrections. The program facilitator is going to address all program needs as it relates to the inmate's placement in that program. The counselor is responsible for all of the outpatient services. That's our substance use issues, anything that has been ordered, mandated through the courts, such as domestic violence, parenting, all those things will be a part of the individual's personalized program plan. And the inmates are active participants in putting these programs together because we want them to be successful. The employment specialist is responsible for developing and identifying employers. And I can tell you, with our 9 facilities, we have an employer bank of over 2,500 employers. As a matter of fact, we can't supply them with what they need to run their operations. Our program service delivery. All of our programs are licensed through the Department of Children and Family Services for our substance use programs. We provide alumni groups, which means that we have individuals, such as the young lady that spoke, that come back and they actually talk about how to be successful in the program. We, in this program service delivery, we talk about employability, how to be ready, how to be prepared, how to interview. We also do a lot of cognitive behavioral interventions because that's usually what has gotten them to the state of incarceration, not understanding how to deal with the triggers and the things that they are actually going through during some of the episodes that get them arrested. Anger management is one of our big program components, and our Compass Hybrid program deals with life skills. A lot of the individuals that come to us have absolutely little as it relates to life skills. The program service delivery continues in the parenting and family reunification piece, education and literacy skills, our mentoring programs. We have individuals from the community, volunteers that come in to help with our budgeting, victim awareness, and again, our life skills. Work release is designed for job readiness. That is the major component. But in a program setting, we want to address those things that are going to keep them in those employment. So we do a lot with the employment specialists, getting them prepared with job interviews, doing mock interviews, helping them to complete applications. What we find is that a lot of these individuals have been incarcerated for quite some time, so they aren't even familiar with using computers. A lot of the application processes are on computers, so that's what we do to help them prepare in order to get ready to go out and be successful. We also talk about desirable work habits. We also talk about attitudes on jobs. We also talk about those relationships out in the community that could get you sent back to the Department of Corrections. We understand that it's a new adventure for them. Some of them have been incarcerated for many years and are not ready to adapt to the freedoms that they have, even though they have on an electronic monitoring device. So we work on strategies for seeking and keeping gainful employment. As participants in the work release program, they have the opportunity to also go to college, participate in VOTEC programs. That's something that is authorized through the state classification officer, through the Department of Corrections. We work in conjunction with them to make sure that they meet the criteria for being in placement in a college or a vocational program. As a part of our contract with the Department of Corrections, we are required to provide vocational programming along with educational. So in our Bridges facilities, we have several OSHA certifications that we do. We have a general OSHA certification that just deals with safety and labor on jobs. We also have an OSHA construction course that they're permitted to be a part of. We have a commercial driver's license program. They are permitted to go online, do all the necessary coursework, and then within 3 months of release, we will permit them to go and actually start doing the actual driving process at the vocational institute that we are partnering with. We also have a forklift certification course, and we try to enroll at our facilities at least 50 inmates annually in these programs to help them have some form of certification to do a job that's necessary outside. One of our more popular programs is our ServSafe food handlers program. And the reason it's popular is because in order to supervise or be in a supervisory capacity in a restaurant, a fast food establishment, you have to have this certification. So we're always being called, asking if there are any that have achieved this certification. And it is the big one for our Orlando facility with everything that goes on with Disney and so forth. Our general education department, all inmates are afforded the opportunity to earn online their GED. They attend adult basic education courses. At two of our sites, we have certified teachers that help facilitate and schedule and get them prepared for the GED programs. Our family orientation, once a month, we have family members come in and we take them through an orientation process to educate them to the rules, the regulations, to the process that their loved one is going through. While at the facility, they're allowed to ask any questions. We tell them about what's allowed so that they can help the inmate to be successful. They're also allowed to ask questions. They're allowed to talk to us about their frustrations. Our clinical team are the ones that actually do this. We also provide monthly or quarterly family days to help with the family reunification. A lot of the men and women that come to us have issues as it relates to parenting, and some of their court orders have been documented that they need to have access to actual good family practices. So we make sure that a part of our program is to provide these family day initiatives. We also have graduation ceremonies. All of these things that I'm talking about are able to be done in a work release setting because the limits of confinement are different than when they're behind the fence. So there's things that we can do in these settings that may not be as easy to manage behind the fence. Our graduation ceremonies are attended by the family members, and our food service and culinary arts programs provide meals so that it is an actual celebration of the achievements. We are also involved with Medicaid-assisted treatment for any individual that has been mandated to treatment in our programs. We provide naloxone for them. And upon release, when they're actually completing their sentences, we provide them with two Narcan kits. Our clinical team instructs and advises on how to store and how to use these drugs. We also provide additional value-added services to enhance the success of the men and women in our programs. We have a chaplaincy program. Every one of our facilities has a chaplain attached to it. We provide young fatherhood initiatives, the 24/7 dads, alumni dinners, and reentry fairs. Our reentry fairs happen quarterly, and we bring in providers from all around the county of that we're in to actually provide information about a continuum of care or services upon release for the men and women participating in our programs. So from intake to release, it's a continuum of care. We want to make sure that upon intake, they understand, they participate in their program. We want to identify any barriers that they may have for successfully completing the program. We make sure that the educational and vocational piece is there. Anything that they need as it relates for continued development, we provide that. The continuing education pieces, it's about the entire person being served. And we know when we're serving that person, we're also serving their family. It's a continuum of care until they're released. We do this in partnership with the Department of Corrections. We couldn't do it without them. And Assistant Secretary Comfort, when we've been able to keep those beds filled, we know the recidivism rates are much lower for those men and women participating in work release programs, community programs. But I'll add a plug here that all of this comes at a cost to provide those services. I thank you for having me and listening, and know that work release is an important piece of transitioning from prison to the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Denmark. Any questions for the presenter? Representative Stark, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Denmark, can you explain to us what your funding mechanism is?
Our funding It comes from the state of Florida through the Department of Corrections budget. Our work release programs, the inmates actually provide subsistence. A portion of their earnings does go to the room and board, as the young lady said, but we get a per diem from the Department of Corrections.
Okay. And do you feel currently that, do you feel currently with your funding that you have in existence and the beds that you have filled now, are you at capacity or could you handle more?
You're recognized.
We are not at capacity. And yes, we could handle more. And yes, we would like an increase in per diem.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Bracy Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much for this presentation. I wholeheartedly agree that programs like this keep recidivism low, and I think they are very, very important. Just a series of questions, if I may. How many students, or what is the percentage of individuals who are students in the college program?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It depends on each facility. Our female facility right now has 7, and I only got that information on last night, so I'm not familiar with how many may be in the male programs.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I see that that's a small number. What are the individuals that are in the college program saying about the balance? It's my understanding, based on your presentation, that they can only take classes after their workload is complete or in conjunction with their workload. How does that work? That seems like a lot based on how many hours a day they're allowed to be off campus. Could you do a deeper dive in that?
You're recognized.
Thank you. They are permitted to be off campus about 12 hours a day. However, a lot of what we provide is online, so it can be done after work. Most of them only work about 8-hour shifts, so the max is 12 hours, and they do have access after hours. It's all, most of it's basically online.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is my last question. So when the speaker talked about the 50% deduction in their pay, is that still accurate? Is that still the rate?
You recognize.
Thank you. It's 55%.
Is it? Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, because we do have, she has two of our centers in her district.
Thank you for that. Well, thank you for being here today. I really appreciate your input into this, and for us to understand how it works, and hopefully it gives us some insight on how we govern this committee and moving forward with bills that we may see.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Committee members, do you have any questions or concerns that you might want to bring up at this time? Anyone? I just looking at the Department of Corrections and how it works and how things are evolving with aging facilities and trying to reduce the recidivism rate in the inmates and get them integrated back into society, I think, you know, it's a good possibility that we could maybe move away from more of the institutionalized areas and get move into more work release programs and try to get a handle on more folks that deserve to, you know, have a better life and when they return back to society. So look forward to working on these issues in the future. I thank you all for being here today. Well, that concludes everything, so. So if there is no further business, Representative Abbott moves that we rise without objection. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
You did great.